Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's May 26, 2015. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We've got a special show. We've got Vaclav from Pilsner Urquell, and we've got the publisher of a new Belgian beer and food magazine. We've got John LaPoya from Bitter and Esters, and we're going to have a great show tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. If you have any questions, you can live tweet us today. Maggie's there at beer_sessions. And remember, we're on the Heritage Radio Network. All right. We got a great show lined up tonight. You know, John, you're over at Bitter and Esters. You guys are doing so many great tasting events, and you've brought in a special guest today.
I did. Ahoya, by the way. That's hello in Czech. I guess I did bring in Václav today because we've been working with Pilsner Urquell.
Hoya.
We've been working with Pilsner Urquell with a couple of events that we're doing. I'm actually going to be at Radagast tonight at 7 o'clock teaching a beer 101 school with them, which is really a lot of fun. It's going to be a free event. So we've been doing all different sort of things. We're going to have Václav's going to be at our store this Friday at 6 o'clock. He's going to be doing basically a meet and greet. If you want to meet the head brewer of Pilsner Urquell, he's a sixth-generation brewer. I mean, this is serious stuff here. Come on down to Bitter and Esters, 700 Washington Avenue, to come and meet him. We're going to have some Urquell samples, and we're going to have some pizza, too.
Well, you know, John, it seemed like for so many years, craft beer was about American IPAs. And it's cool to see more people asking for good pilsners and lagers and going back to traditions. But you're kind of at the forefront of what you're doing with teaching beer classes, and you even have a series, Brew Like a Pro, where you make versions of
We have, actually have the breweries come to the store, yeah, and do a brew on our we have a 15-gallon system that we do as a brew on premises. And you're right. It's we talk a lot about American craft beer, and working with Pilsner Urquell has got me to appreciate the Europeans again, because they're the ones who really started it. And as far as Pilsners go, Pilsner Urquell are the ones that invented it. It's like it's really amazing, such a great beer. I really revisited a lot of the European styles beer by doing these events.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, hey, everybody who are listening to radio, where we are sitting now, Heritage.
Love having you on, man. It's good to have you back.
I'm quite happy that I'm here again, because last year we talked here about the beer as well. And we started talking about craft breweries. And I think it's a nice story, nice history. If I look back to history of City Pilsner and history of Pilsner Urquell, because it was date 1295, end of 13th century, when King Wenzel II delegated to all citizens, it was about 300 buildings in City Pilsner, privilege brew the beer. And I would say it was foundation of craft brewing or home brewing activities, because each building in Pilsen brewed the beer, sometimes more successfully, sometimes not so good.
That's great, man. Well, we're drinking a special version of the Pilsner. I know you brought some guys with you. Why don't you guys introduce yourself, too, because you got a great sales team here.
My name is James. I'm the trade quality manager with Brian over here.
And we know Brian because he won what was that contest you won? You're like the best bartender in the world or something.
Beer in 2012, it was the International Master Bartender Competition, and that's how I got hooked up with Pilsner Urquell, and I became a trade quality manager. And essentially what that really means is they send us to school to become beer merchants, and we become certified master draft technicians. And we just try to make sure that people all over our region, the Northeast region, and we have other members in the country, in California, in Chicago, is that we are trying to get establishments and retailers to uphold the standards that we were taught, and serve the beer the high quality way that it was served in the Czech Republic. So that's basically it.
All right, it's great. And one thing, we also have another guest, Paul Walsh. He's got a Belgian beer and food magazine, and it's just starting to come to the U.S. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much. Yes, I've lived in Belgium for 10 years. I'm from Ireland. And it's an interesting time for us because we're actually launching the magazine in the US, and we have an event tomorrow evening at Belgian Beer Cafe on Fifth Avenue. And it's really our market. We're a sort of group of English-speaking people who live in Belgium. Rob, our photographer, is here as well. And we thought that we were very well positioned to communicate the stories about Belgian beer and Belgian breweries and a bit of the history to an international audience. That's really what we focus on in the magazine.
Well, that's great. We've got a lot to cover tonight.
We started talking about craft breweries, and here are very interesting people who brew the beer or teach how brew this beer. And I think they will confirm me, and this is very important. If you will brew the beer at home, if you will brew the beer in pub brewery, if you will brew the beer in bigger brewery, very important is caring about quality, and this is our way. I think there is no important size of brewery, but caring about brewing, caring about quality, and add to brewing a piece of your heart.
I agree completely.
And Paul, we were talking earlier too. You're the same kind of thing where it's like you've got these traditions of brewing, then you have modern technology. But in Europe, what were you saying? You're saying that.
Well, I was saying that the distinction between craft beer and sort of industrial mass-produced beer is much easier to make in the United States, where you really had a craft beer tradition that developed 30, 40 years ago, and which was contrasted with the big international breweries. In Europe, and certainly in Belgium, it's much more of a grey area. There's not craft and non-craft, good and bad. There are good breweries which are very big, and there are good breweries that are very small. So it's just more difficult to make the distinction, I think.
And you think it's the same kind of thing in the rest of Europe, too?
In the rest of Europe, is it so that, of course, craft brewing is growing, and we supported it because it helped to create on the market more brands. And to Czech Republic is coming back what we practically forgot when we started brewed lager in 1842. And this lager was so popular that it started to be start spread across the whole world. And if I look to ales, which are more common brands brewing in home brewing, because the process is a little bit easier and fermentation by higher temperature. This is beer which was brewed in these Bohemian breweries, which I mentioned, for 700 years before.
So much history. It's amazing. I mean, you're talking about 700 years ago. I don't remember that far.
And this is
Vaclav does.
This is the reason why I
he has historical memory.
I would like empower all home brewers to care about the beer, because Pilsner Citizen started as a home brewers in this year what I mentioned, 1295. And if you will be so intensive in training, brewing, quality, you should be like Pilsner.
We should ask him some tough questions now. All right.
Pilsner style is one of the hardest to brew to get right. Right? I mean, that's as far as homebrewers, that's the one style that they all want to know. They want to get it perfect. It should be crisp. It should be clean. It should be just right.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
Hard.
Because by ales, you use for mashing infusion. And we, by brewing lagers, we use one, two or three meshes. Personal use for mashing three meshes. And this is a little bit complicated to play the game in the kitchen with so many vessels. And fermentation is done by very low temperature. Of course, Pilsner is a little bit different because we have special type of yeast. And it's not so deep fermented because we don't brew the beer for alcohol, but for taste.
Let's ask some tough questions. John, you have some too. Okay, at what age did you first work in a brewery?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, I started as a trainee and beginner, and after 1 year of this trainee process, I recognized practically all breweries which belongs to Pilsner Urquell, because It was 7 breweries, and size of the breweries was similar like current craft breweries, not so big, 50,000-60,000 hectoliters. And there the people were doing all activities. First day in brew house, and next day in fermentation room, and then in maturation, all position. And I spent 5 years as a cellar master, and it was huge school for me, because maturation of Pilsner is an unbelievable process, and you finalize and fine-tune the taste of Pilsner. And because in this cellars was still filling of the barrels, I still remember the moments when we filled the beer, and on the barrel was written, sent to New York. Wow, it was great, crazy moment for us, because we were behind the Iron Curtain, and I said, I never see this beautiful city. And I'm here.
You were wrong. You're seeing it now.
It's true. And what was it like under the Iron Curtain? I mean, how were you able to keep making beer?
I'm not sure whether was it positive or negative, because after Second World War, and thanks guys for liberation of Pilsen, because it was American guys.
I was there, John was there.
Yeah. My dad was there.
Thank you for it. We continued, and brewery started to be owned by government, and government didn't invest to brewery. And it was the reason why we still hold in this brewery wooden vats for fermentation and wooden barrels for maturation. And maybe it was a beautiful moment for us, because we don't change nothing. And this is the main rule what I heard from previous brewmasters. Please change nothing. Continue with same ingredients, continue with same process. You can modernize equipment if you will have money for it, but don't change the process because it could change the taste of the beer, and this is not good.
Václav, I have a question, and I was searching online. Pilsner is the only beer that Pilsner Urquell makes, just that one beer, right? You don't have any other styles coming out of the brewery?
Pilsner Urquell, this name Plzeňský Prazdro is just Czech translation of Pilsner Urquell, is created from four breweries now. Pilsner Urquell, second brand is Gambrinus, then we have nearby Prague, Velkopopovický Kozel, and in Normoravia we have brewery Radegast. You have here Radegast Hall, we visited it yesterday. And in Pilsner Urquell, we brewed only Pilsner Urquell. But in other breweries, we, of course, brewed another brands, another lagers, another special beers, because as well in Czech is the time for growing specialties. And we do it.
We do it under other brand names. Yeah. Okay. That's what I
do. What about this Pils that we're drinking now? This is a little different.
This one, what we have on the table, is special because it's unfiltered, unpasteurized, and it's very close to beer which was born in this year 1842, because in this time the beer was not filtered and not pasteurized. Later, I read it in our historical chronicles, there is written, under pressure of competition fight, we should buy one filter, and part of our production we should filter. It's a pity, because unfiltered beer content complex of all vitamins, B and more active compounds. And we now, this unfiltered beer, we have it for a whole year in one pub in Pilsen, named Naparkano, and then we have it in the cellars, because when we started change fermentation and maturation equipment to stainless steel tanks, we were worried about change of taste. And it was reason why we led there one department where we still make a fermentation in wooden vats, 27 hectoliters, and maturation in big barrels, 40 hectoliters. And the reason for it is that we have daily chance to compare taste of the beer from wooden and from stainless steel, and thanks God, is the same.
Wow. Oh, by the way, a hectoliter is 26 gallons.
Right? Is that what it is?
That's what it is, yeah.
And then, John, so you're leading a Pilsner-making workshop soon, or you got a homebrew competition for
Pils?
We
have a homebrew competition that Pilsner Kell is sponsoring. We're having homebrewers make Pilsners. Now, we allowed them to make Czech, German, Bohemian, or American-style Pilsners, because most of the light beers that are in America are Pilsners, we're supposed to be Pilsners, but we're allowing them to do that. That competition is full. We gave them until July because it takes a long time to make a proper Pilsner. And we'll see who makes the best Pilsner in Brooklyn's homebrewing community.
That's going to be fun.
I was twice as a judge for this homebrewing competition in the past 2 years. And I tasted really, really excellent beer, what I remember. And the winner from San Francisco, this lady, visited Pilsen. I brewed with this lady beer or one brew in our small brewery for 1 hectoliter, 100 liters. And the lady latest was announced as the best home brewer of U.S. It's a great.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing. Very cool. We're taking a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Coming back. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, our Kickstarter was successful. We're going to have a new website. Jack Inns did a great job. Aaron Fairbanks, Allison Hamlin. We love being on the Heritage Radio Network. There's some great new shows. My favorite show, of course, Beer Sessions Radio, but I'm a big fan of a lot of the other ones, too. Cooking Issues is a great one, and Cutting the Curd is always good, talking about cheese. So keep listening, heritageradionetwork.org. All right, so we got a special show here. Vaclav, our master brewer from Pilsner Urquell is here a second time on our show. It's great to have you. John LaPolia is talking about
LaPolia.
Talking about a Pilsner homebrew competition. And I think that's when I first met Brian. You're like the master bartender of the world. A couple years ago, there was a big Pilsner Urquell sponsored another homebrew competition we were at, I think at Radagast, and Josh Mercine was involved. So it's pretty smart of you guys to promote homebrew competitions along the style of beer that you're known for. I think that's really engaging the community. I mean, I definitely think the people that are homebrewing are the most interested beer people right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're the ones drinking the most, that's for sure.
So, John, tell us about Friday night. If you're listening now, this Friday at Bitter and Esther's somewhere in Brooklyn.
Vaclav's going to come. I've been excited to meet him. I was very excited to meet him today. He's going to come to the store from 6 to 8, and just got some pizzas, some beers. It's going to be pretty mellow. Just meet the guy who's the sixth head brewer of Pilsner Urquell. So it's like pretty amazing. You get to talk to him about Pilsner. I mean, who else are you going to talk to?
And practice your Czech.
And to practice your Czech, yeah. Say ahoy to him.
Well, give us a couple of words of Czech, Vaclav.
Most important word for us is pivo. Pivo, don't forget it, because it's beer. And we split it in Czech. We have small one, malý pivo, and big one, velký pivo. Yeah, it's you don't need nothing else.
Like that would be a big one.
Yeah.
John, what do you guys, are you serving either one, the little Pivo or the big Pivo?
And still, still useful for you will be once more. Jeszcze jedno.
Jeszcze in,
what does that mean? I want a big beer.
Jeszcze jedno. Velký pivo.
Jeszcze jedno.
Well, another guy, we got Paul from the Belgian Beer and Food Magazine, which is launching in New York. And tell us about Belgian pills. You know, we're talking about there's craft breweries in the U.S. But, you know, I don't want to talk about Stella because that's not really a beer.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to make any comment on that. But yes, I think it's something that's not really appreciated that well, that Belgium does actually have some good pilsners as well. And of course, it came from the influence of the Czech and the German pilsners. And before the First World War, German pilsners were extremely popular. But it was... And there were German bars in many parts of Belgium as well. But after the First World War and then with the Second World War as well, Belgian breweries started making their own pilsners. And, of course, there are some which are quite good, some which are really not that good, and maybe the ones that are more well-known give Belgian pilsners a bad name. But there are some small breweries making good pilsners. Saison, Dupont. The Pont Brewery, they make a very nice pilsner called Red Or, which is really not distributed that much, but it's got this character that you won't find in some of the other pilsners. And as well as that, we also have this unfiltered pilsner. Hacked make a very nice unfiltered pilsner that, like Pilsner Urquell, you can only find at one particular bar just beside the Hacked Brewery. The problem, of course, is that it doesn't have a long shelf life. So if you want it, you have to drink it fresh, but... I think, like these guys are saying, without the filtration, without the pasteurization, it makes a huge difference.
I think you mentioned freshness of the beer, and this is very important for us because lagers, or mainly Pilsner Urquell, is very sensitive for caring about the beer, and this is the reason why we recommend consume this beer as soon as is possible. And best way is to drink it immediately in the maturation cellars. By the way, this is the reason why I'm working there for 35 years. And fresh beer and freshness, this is a very important point for us. And we started delivered to many bars in Czech Republic, it's more than 700 bars, when we deliver the beer in big tank as fresh as is possible. This is unfiltered, unpasteurized beer, which is going straight from the brewery to the bar, to the restaurant. And what is else on this beer? The beer is brewed absolutely on the same way like other beer in kegs or bottles, but different is freshness. Because this beer is going direct from brewery to the bar in idle condition by proper temperature, and caring about the beer is in this bar excellent. And because the popularity of this beer is growing, we started with expedition of this beer to countries which are located around the Czech Republic. We started with tank beer in Slovakia. We continue to Austria. Then next bars are in London. There is four big tank bars direct in London and another one in Cambridge. We have tank bar in Ireland. We have two bars in Berlin. And number of these bars is growing and are very popular. And I mentioned it because we have in front of us very nice bottles where is important, for example, maturation in the bottle or second fermentation. And as I mentioned already, Pilsner Urquell is the best as fresh as is possible. But because it's not so through fermented, and this is maybe answer for people who would like to brew it, we have there more residual extract, only 4.4 ABV, higher portion of bitter compounds. And both these compounds, residual extract and bitter compounds from the hops, are very sensitive for light and for long-term storage and for temperature. And this is the reason why we, for example, founded Master Bartender competition, and Brian is the winner for US, where we train the people through this popular form, how care about the beer, don't damage it.
You're right. I know you're serious about beer, but James, your rep, where did this growler of the unfiltered, unpasteurized Pilsner or Quail come from?
This came from Torst. So we
is amazing.
We had an event at Torst last night. There's about 30 people, and I've never seen a room so silent for a good hour and a half as Voss talked. And
so how did they get that unfiltered, unpasteurized keg in New York City?
I flied with a plane and was sitting on this keg. It's not so beautiful like in the airplane chair, but what I... can do for personal recall, I will do it.
So we should, you just sit on all the kegs. Yeah. They'll taste better.
It's transported by airplane, of course.
And Johnny, so in your competition to make the homebrew, are there any guidelines for the pills?
We want them to stick to the Brewers Judge Certification Program guidelines, the BJCP guidelines for each beer style. So we just, it has to be a Pilsner, which actually brings me to a question I want to ask you, Vaclav. How do you define a Pilsner? I mean, Pilsners are light lagers, but like if someone said to you, what is a Pilsner, exactly what are we looking for when we're tasting it?
I think describing Pilsner beer is very nice in rules which are set for this biggest American taste competition, World Beer Cup. And thanks God, because we were, and my colleagues, of course, from Czech Republic, we were a few times as a judges in this competition. And during these few years, where are in this competition category of Pilsner style or Czech Pilsner style, we with this team Czech judges tuned and finalized a real description of the beer, and I think it's very well described in this parameters which are for this World Beer competition.
But for people listening, what would you say was just general? What is a Pilsner?
General, it's described as a light lager, pale lager, don't through fermented with higher portion of residual extract with nice bitterness. And if I look to color, the color is a little bit darker, about 12 EBC than other lighter beer. Yeah, it's this is typical for mainly for Pilsner or Kel, but for the Czech beers as well, because Czech beer, if we look to parameters, is exactly in these parameters what I mentioned, a little bit higher bitterness, not so through fermented beer, a little bit higher color, is differentiated in comparison for other Pilsner which are produced or brewed in Europe or in the rest of the world. And it was reason why we let, with help of Czech Brewing and Malting Association, protecting geographical indication Czech beer. And there is described that Czech beer is brewed in area which is plus minus described by Board of Czech Republic. They should use volume at least 80% of Czech malt produced from Czech varieties of barley. They have similar parameters for hop. They should use mashing, 1, 2, or 3 mashing process, and they should make a separate fermentation and separate maturation, no single single tank. And fermentation and maturation is done by a lower temperature. And this is description of this Czech beer, Pilsner style, I would say. And of course, there are still analytical parameters in which ranges should be each parameter to have the possibility to have on the label seal Czech European Union and Czech beer as a protected geographical indication.
Well, that's great.
And of course, our brands has the label there.
That's awesome. Okay. I can't believe I'm sitting with you, Vaclav. There's so much. I know there's so much you want to say. I'm going to quick jump over to Paul from what did you pour for us, Paul, from Belgian Food and Beer Magazine?
Yeah, so I brought two beers. But the first beer that we're drinking now is the Saison Saint-Fuyant.
And that's actually the beer that we're going to be having at our event tomorrow night. Saison is a very interesting style because the definition is pretty loose, and I think that's been one of the reasons that it's become a sort of style that's very popular for American brewers and for brewers in the United Kingdom as well. There's not a strict definition. It's more to do with where the beer comes from and the story behind why this beer was brewed. And really, it was a seasonal farmhouse beer made for big farms and made for the workers of those farms with the grain that was left over from the harvest. So it's really a bière de terroir is what they call it. And you'll find saisons in many different styles. You'll find darker saisons, sweeter saisons. But I think that the archetype is Saison Dupont, which is a blonde, slight medium alcohol, 6% alcohol, refreshing dry beer. And Saison Saint-Fillon certainly follows in that type of direction.
Yeah, we interviewed the owner last year.
Yeah.
From Saint-Fillon.
This one thing about saisons is they tend to be fermented warm.
Yeah.
Sometimes up to 90 degrees. So it's something that homebrewers, especially back to homebrewing with me, make during the summer. Yep. We sell saison yeast like crazy, and it's the exact opposite of Pilsner or Quell because that has to be fermented very cool.
I just want to tell you that I'm really proud of you, Paul, that I'm looking at a copy of your magazine. It's nice. I like to have a magazine that's in print.
Yes.
It's nice to feel it. There's beautiful photography. Belgian Beer and Food Magazine will be launching in the United States.
Yes, thank you.
We got
a
party this week in New York City.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, we got a part. What we have, in fact, is a distribution agreement with Books a Million. Which is an important step for us because really our market is people in the United States, you guys. People are passionate about beer. And the reason that we started the magazine is because we felt that one of the great selling points, like with Pilsner or Quell, is the history and the story. I mean, you don't have that so much in the United States. And now the quality of beer in the United States is really improving. So I think the Belgian brewers and Czech brewers, European brewers, really need to push that story.
And you're right. And people are definitely interested in old styles and traditions. And hey, we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Jack, we don't need AC in the studio because we've got European guests tonight, and you know they don't have AC in Europe, you know.
Well, we've got this cool beer. I mean, that's really...
Oh, you do?
That's all we need.
So you had a good question, Paul, for the homebrewers.
Yeah, well, one thing that I hear from Belgian brewers, and I'm not a homebrewer myself, but when they speak about Pilsner, they generally say that it's one of the hardest, if not the hardest, beers to brew because the flavor profile is quite clean, so that if there's a brewing fault, it really stands out.
So what's your question?
Exactly.
So do you agree with that?
I do, and especially with a proper Czech Pilsner, like Pilsner or Quell, it goes through a three-step mash. It goes through three decoctions where you take out a portion of the mash, basically you boil it and you add it back to the mash to bring the temperature up. One thing that I found out about Pilsner or Quell, which I didn't know, is that they actually malt their own grains, which is pretty hardcore. And then they do that decoction because they under-modify the malt. It's kind of nerdy. And then they do... A triple decoction, and then once they're done making the mash, making the wort and doing the boil and adding their hops, they then have to ferment very cool. And for homebrewers, a cool fermentation requires some sort of chamber. I mean, same for breweries, but breweries have jackets and stuff to do that. Something I wanted to ask you, Vaskalev, was your yeast pitch, I was reading, it seems to be very high. Do you add a lot of yeast? It was a half a liter to a hectoliter, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And
sorry, nerdy.
You described very nice how we brew the beer. I will add a little bit of details for it because it's not only mashing. And we do this mashing in copper kettle, which is direct heated with open flame. And this is in the kitchen very hard to copy it. And this open flame, which is below the kettle, copper kettle, is very important because how we do by the mashing these simple sugars and prepare it for yeast. These sugars are a little bit caramelized on the wall of this copper kettle, and this is the reason why Pilsner is a little bit golden in color and has a little bit caramel tones in taste. And you mentioned ingredients, malt. This is very important as well, because we from beginning, from foundation of the brewery to nowadays, we prepare the malt on our own malting plant. And this is very important because we produce a little bit low modified malt, and this own production is exactly what we need to our mashing process. It's combination. And what is important on the end, we brewmasters, we could say which temperature we use for which mash, how we make a fermentation or maturation. But we forgot to say you that we add there a little bit our body, a little bit our heart. And this is leading to...
That's why you were sitting on the keg on the airplane. It made it taste better.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Guys, you guys are doing a lot of things this week. So tell us more about this Taurus last night.
So Taurus was an integration with Voss talking about Pilsner with people that care about beer. And we feel Taurus really represents beer in an amazing way in the region. And to be there and to highlight it with those guests, it was great. But what we're also doing with John at Bitters and Esters is offering a free beer school to the consumer. So I used to work at Eataly. I helped open the Chicago brewery with Sam and everyone over there. And what was really big about Eataly was education. And so we trained 600 people about beer for free and before they got hired. And so I took that energy and brought it to Pilsner. And beyond Pilsner, I want Pilsner to be the forefront of training people about beer for free. I think that, you know, if they can get the base knowledge, and we have all these styles and so many SKUs that are coming into the market, but the education part of it, I think, is sometimes left out with the consumer. So we're bringing all these brands out with all these crazy labels and styles, but we're not, you know, educating them on it. So hopefully we can bring that to a forefront.
I think it's incredibly important, educating the drinkers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And end users.
You know, and, you know, hopefully drawing them back into Bitters and Esters and some other places, but just to learn more about beer that way.
Well, this is great beer. I mean, unfiltered, unpasteurized. I mean, I think when we were talking about craft earlier, that's what we hope for. We want to get beer in that state as fresh as possible, as local as possible. And how can you guys as a, you know, even though you're based in Czech, you're an international company, how can you get this unpasteurized, unfiltered beer into the hands of more, you know, consumers?
I think our guys will find a way how we will do it. And if it will take, of course, a few months, maybe years. First, what we did, it's 2 years ago, we started with cool distribution, cool transport of personal alcohol to U.S., means all containers, doesn't matter whether bottles, cans, or kegs, are transported in active cooled container by temperature 4 to 5 degrees Celsius. There is no change in taste, and the quality of the beer dramatically changed one step ahead after implementation this process. And another possibility how you can reach this unfiltered, unpasteurized beer, please come to Pilsen. Very simple. Because we will show it the brewery. We will let you taste from this wooden barrel direct in cellars of the brewery. Or if you will visit Prague.
Brian, have you been to Prague?
I have. I was there. I was there for the competition at the breweries in Pilsen, and then I went to Prague afterwards. But for the first time, when I was involved in the competition, they actually shut the brewery down for about 36 hours, which was pretty funny. After the competition, on the very last day that we had the celebration and the blessing of the beer, which they do annually on their anniversary, they had started production at 12 a.m. that morning, and we were all in there at 8 a.m., and it was about 110 degrees in there. So we were all dressed up trying to look pretty for the crowds because there's so many people show up for the blessing of the beer, and everybody was just sweating bullets. So we try not to be in the brewery.
No, if I do go out to Prague, what are a couple of the bars that are serving this fresh unfiltered Pilsner?
Well, in Pilsen, all the Pilsner Raquel, it's just the freshest in the world. I mean, you can walk into a bar and drink Pilsner Raquel that's 6 days old, and then they have some really, really some special tanks of beer, which they call the Tankovna. Is that right? And that beer literally is just shipped in a truck and then dressed, directly transported into a tank. And sometimes what they're doing over different parts of Europe is they're actually just transporting, like 100 liter tanks, or the size varies a little bit, but, and then they just drop that tank off and put it into a special container and serve it direct from there. But that beer has touched no oxygen. Sometimes it's served in a bladder and the bladder is compressed from the outside, but it literally... In Pilsen and Prague, it is the freshest beer, and everywhere I went, when you look at other brands in Pilsen and also in Prague, Pilsner Urquell has, it's just signage everywhere because the people of the Czech Republic believe in the brand so much, it just dwarfs every other brand over there. It's really interesting to see.
I could make you another recommendation for how to catch this unfiltered, unpasteurized beer from tank, because many of you probably will visit Expo in Milano, in Italy, and we have there a nice bar where we send the beer in tanks as well, and we drink about one tank a day. It's more than 1,000 beer in Czech Pavilion. And for example, you ask me about Prague. We have there the bar which served the beer only 1 year shorter time than we produce Pilsner Urquell. There is the bar named Upinka Su, which was opened 1843, and from this time without break served only Pilsner Urquell. But there is many of new tank beer, modern one, and if you will go around the bar and see beer from tank, Česky, another learning, pivo z tanku. This is exactly what you are looking for.
You know, that is so great. You said so many things, and I really appreciate that you're on the show. Let's wrap it up with Paul from the Belgian Food and Beer Magazine. So one thing I notice about your magazine is that you're really covering so many Belgian brands, some of which I haven't seen in the States, but some I have.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like with Pilsner Urquell, the best way to experience Belgian beer is to go there and discover these brands for yourself, discover these beers for yourself. That's what we want to emphasize, too. Tourism is a big part of what we're trying to promote, and there's no substitute for that, really. And so we're really happy to write about beers that you can't find in the U.S. I think our readers want some of them, want that sort of information.
What's the last year that you brought? Well, many of us know it.
This is... one of the most well-regarded beers in Belgium. This is Rodenbach Vintage. And if we have time, I'd really like to ask Václav what he thinks of this beer. And just before we get into that, I think it's so nice to be here with him, because we have in craft beer an emphasis on making a new beer every week or a new beer every month, which is great and exciting and innovative. But it's so nice to focus on making one good beer or a few good beers and making it well. But with that in mind, I'd just like you to tell me what you think of these beers, because it's quite different from what you do.
Yeah, I think it's a great beer. And we opened the eyes and the doors for this type of beer in Czech Republic as well. And
Rodenbach, the Flemish Sour.
Yeah, and but we are a little bit different country, because we have the consumption 145 liters per capita.
And most in the world.
Yeah, and habit for drinking in Czech, but it could be changed. Nobody knows. Either the guys are going to the bar and start with one brand and finish with same brand. instance, this beer, I couldn't imagine to sit there and drink five, six more bottles.
No, I think that's very important.
It's specialty.
And that's a real background to our magazine as well. It's a different way to drink and experience beer. And that's what you see in Belgium. The culture around it is so important. Drinking slowly, drinking with food, sipping it, appreciating it. That's one of the things that makes Belgium different, and it's something that's catching on as well.
Oh, personal care, you can drink slow as well. And for example, to recognize another styles, I came yesterday to New York, and my first steps led to Stone Street, because this is beautiful street for me. I moved from one side to another one and tried a little bit samples, and now my eyes looked and I saw Pilsner. It was great for me to find in this type of street, like Stone Street.
Masos, just talk to us in Czech for a few. Tell us about your trip to New York in Czech.
Já jsem vyrazil do Spojených států proto, abych se podíval, jak se tady v Americe čepuje pivo, jak se starají o kvalitu. A vy, který mě slyšíte a posloucháte v česky, tak věřte, že budeme dělat všechno proto, abyste tady pili stejný pivo, jako my pijeme v Plzni, a já vám to garantuju. Děkuju. Hey, Radio Heritage.
John, it's like a totally song. It's beautiful, man. All right. You guys, this has been a special show, and we're going to go back and listen to this again and again. I really am pushing you guys. You should send more of these unpasteurized, unfiltered kegs of Pilsner Kelle over here. Right, John?
Amazing stuff. Yeah.
And then Friday night, what? You can meet him at your spot.
Friday night, we're going to be at Bitter Nestor, 700 Washington Avenue. I just also want to say goodbye to one of my employees, Bobby, who's going to open a brewery down in New Orleans. He's opening Flatboat Brewery. He's leaving tomorrow.
Awesome place. So Bitter Nestor is one of the heartbeats of craft beer in New York City. And Paul, welcome to New York. And again, you're launching your magazine. What's the name again?
Belgian Beer and Food. We're at Belgian Beer Cafe. They call it Nomad, but you told me not to call it.
But the magazine.
The magazine, Belgian Beer and Food. And we have still five spaces available tomorrow night. So if your listeners want to come along, they can just send me an email, paul@belgianbeerandfood.com. We've got some great food. We've got some great beer.
It's a nice, it looks like a Beer Advocate style print magazine, but
thank you.
With a lot of it's beautiful. Your photographer's here.
Yeah,
he's over there. What's his name again?
That's Rob. He takes all of the photography in the magazine. It's very important to present it well. The visual aspect of Belgian beer is very important.
Great times.
Well.
It really blew me away with this unpasteurized, unfiltered Pilsner Kelle. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to John, Vaslav, Paul, Brian, and James for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and to our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.